Welcome to the Awakened Man Podcast, where we promulgate that your physical, psychological, and financial health are your true sources of wealth that must be safeguarded and optimized to achieve long-lasting happiness. Here, we'll discuss tactics on how you may self-actualize to reach the pinnacle of authentic masculinity by embracing true libertarian principles, arming yourself with red pill knowledge, as well as implementing the most up-to-date holistic health biohacks to optimize your health. Stop being a blue pill sheep, being led to slaughter by big government and the court system. Become an awakened man. Here's your host, Gregory.
Hello, everybody. This is Gregory, and welcome back to another episode of The Awakened Man, a repository of holistic health, red pill masculinity, and ultimate freedom. I hope you're doing well today. Today, we're going to talk about why the divorce rate among second and third marriages is so exorbitantly high. Now, some of you might not be aware of this, but it is high, and you can do a very, very quick Google search of it and find out that the divorce rate of second marriages hovers anywhere between 68 and 73%, depending on which study it is. And third marriages, it hovers around 78 to 81%. And fourth marriage, if you're going to go down the road of Larry King and Liz Taylor and all these, as you can expect, is going to be even higher. Now, a lot of people who divorce and want to remarry don't bother thinking about this right while they're planning the wedding. And hopefully, you know, the woman's not going to wear white again, but you know, sometimes if a woman can get away with it, they're going to want to have the nice wedding again if they can. But it's not like the groom or the bride, and they're probably going to be in their 30s, if not 40s by this point, while they're prepping for where they're going to do their honeymoon and where they're going to buy their flowers and where they, you know, all these things. They don't just do the cursory Google search. Hey, what's the chance this marriage isn't going to work? Whoa, 70%. Maybe we need to have a talk with the honey and reevaluate. No, right? Because you're in, quote, love. Though I hazard to think that I don't think unconditional love exists. And I've talked about this in prior episodes. If the woman gains 200 pounds or stops having sex or both and says, this ain't going to change, the guy's going to fall out of love with him, out of love with her. And if he says, yeah, I'm going to stop working, we're going to go live on the streets, or we're going to go move to the ghetto, she's probably going to leave him. And this is just the innate wiring of men and women. But we really don't think about, hey, I need to look at these stats. And then why is the prevalence so high of failure? So we're going to talk about some of those things today. Some of them are pretty obvious, and maybe some of them aren't. But one of the things, and I think that the deepest thing about all these things, and we'll really flesh this out at the end, is going to be doing the deep work, the baggage that we typically carry from childhood, the early childhood trauma that reared its ugly head perhaps through high school and then in the marriage. And it could have been one of the reasons why the first marriage ended, but you just want to rinse, lather, repeat. You don't want to think about it. You want a white knight. You want to blame everything on your ex, and you want to tell the new person that it was all your ex's fault. We call this white knighting, especially in the red pill world, where a woman meets a new guy, let's say the prospective second husband, and when the guy asks, hey, so you're divorced, you know, what happened? And then it's all about, well, he was controlling, narcissistic, abusive, you know, whatever it is. And it's typically those three or four things. And then the new guy, because he just wants to get laid and he likes this new girl, will believe him. We call it white knighting. You know, he's going to come in because he wants to save her. Men have this kind of endogenous need to want to rescue the woman, right? So he's going to be the white knight that comes in, and he doesn't really have any discernment because he really is getting dick-napped, so to speak. And he wants to believe everything she says. And so he falls for the narrative instead of ever asking the ex or interviewing or finding the ex and be like, hey, what's your take on the divorce? And don't you think you deserve that? If you're going to hitch the wagon again to a new person, don't you think you deserve to find both sides of the story? But so many men get white knighted, and they don't realize it until they're in the second marriage. And then by that point, that's one of the reasons you see the stepfather effect kick in, which we'll talk about in a second. So look, one of the reasons, of course, is you just rush into it. It's a rebound. And you're not fully finished with the first marriage before the second one comes in. And look, we know that women have this innate need for security. This goes back to their Paleolithic wiring. It's not shocking. And coupled with the need for security, because they're the weaker sex, is hypergamy, right? So if they're going to remarry, they're not going to go from being married to the lawyer to being married typically to the garbage collector, right? They're going to want to move up, moving on up, like the Jeffersons said, moving on up to the penthouse in this. So that's what they're going to do. And couple that with women don't like to be alone. They like to be in a relationship because it helps define them. Because lots of times women are values chameleons. They really don't know what they themselves represent or what their values are. They're kind of like the Runaway Bride, the Julia Roberts, Richard Gere movie, where she's different people to whoever she's engaged. So when she's engaged to the high school coach, she's more tomboyish and likes football. When she's engaged to the literary guy, she's more of the literati intelligentsia. And a lot of women are like that. And so after divorce, especially if they have kids, they need to latch on to the next provisioning, so they jump on. And women move on faster than men. Any man could tell you this. Like when a man and a woman break up, the man typically is devastated and the woman's like riding the carousel within a week or a month or whenever. And this largely has to do with Paleolithic underwiring too. This is the war bride syndrome. So like when a conquering tribe would come and kill all the men, they would tell the women, well, women, we can either kill you or you can be our new wives. Because, you know, back then they really didn't have monogamy. So you can be our new wives or our concubine, or we'll kill you. And then the women are like, well, I don't want to die. So I guess I'll be your wife. And then they eventually grow attached. Think of Daenerys Targaryen from Game of Thrones. I mean, this was the nature of things back then. And men were like, I'll die for you. And then they die and they snuff out their DNA and their lineage forever. The women are like, well, yeah, you were great, but this guy is the king of the new tribes. So certainly rebounding. And it's kind of funny because you'll see both sexes rebound with polar opposites. It's total opposite. You'll see, like, let's say the woman, the first husband was a conservative, pro-life, Republican, religious. And then the next guy she dates, you know, 1 month later, is going to be liberal, atheist, pro-choice, progressive, humanist. You know, it's just complete opposites. It's because she's really trying to get, and you can apply this to men too. She's really trying to get away from anything that reminds her of her ex. So she wants to do the polar opposite. And by this time too, one of the reasons why the first marriage ended was disenchantment, disillusionment, familiarity breeds contempt, all these things we talk about. And so she's like, I'm so tired of the traditional conservative. Oh, I'm so tired of listening to this stuff. So I want something fresh. I want something new. And so she wants to do the polar opposite. Or conversely, right? She's married to the atheist, and now she's like, I'm tired of this hedonistic, selfish existence, and I want to go where there's a little more meaning. And so she'll go to the church-going dude. So you see the polar opposites going in there. But certainly, I would tell both men and women, if you are going to remarry, which, of course, I don't really recommend, but if you are going to, for men, I should say, for women, it's a financial bonanza most of the time. But I would tell you, definitely wait a year or two before you even get in a relationship or date. But it's so hard. You know, there's this program called Divorce Care. Some of you might have heard it. It's run nationally. It's a national program that's normally run out of mega churches because they just have the space to host it. And it's a 16-week program where it's 2 hours long and they provide food. The first 30 minutes you watch a video, and every week it's a different theme. You know, finances, how to talk to the kids about the divorce, dating, should you date, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then the next 30 minutes is like one of the leaders gives a personal testimony about what they went through. And then the last hour or so is you break up into groups. So let's say there's 40 people in this group and they break you up into groups of five. And you're with the same group of people all 16 weeks. And so it's like group therapy. And there's a leader in each group and they mediate. And so you develop relationships with these people. Of course, they don't want you to date the people in your group, but you develop relationships and you talk about whatever the topic is that week, or you talk about whatever you went through that week. And I recommend the program. And they'll tell you, do not date. And I remember I had a rebound relationship from my ex-wife to my ex-fiance, and we went to this program because she was recently divorced. We went to this program together, and we were just like rolling our eyes, like, oh, you know, we're in love, blah, blah, blah. You know, they don't know what they're talking about, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, and of course they were right. You should absolutely not, because you're in this cloud, this haze post-divorce. And even though sometimes you're really sad, going back to the episode we did about the divorce rate being so predominant in men, or you might be happy, yeah, I've purged myself of this anchor, so to speak, you're still in a shroud of confusion and uncertainty, and there's just too much tumult going on for you to really have your bearings, But I would recommend that program to anybody, and it's free, and it's anonymous. You can give fake names. Another reason is they don't do marriage counseling. Now, look, I mean, as a Catholic, I had to do marriage counseling for my first marriage, and clearly it didn't work. But, you know, I would say that counseling is better than no counseling. And in the Catholic Church, you know, you have to go talk to a priest, or you have to do I like the priest route, and because you have to fill out this questionnaire and all these things, and you talk to the priest for weeks. And there's some movies. There's that Robin Williams movie where Mandy Moore and Jim Krasinski are getting married, and he plays the meddlesome priest. You know, they also have weekend retreats, which I don't recommend, because those are just one weekend. But most of the Christian churches have some sort of counseling ahead of time. And look, this brings up red flags. And are you? And here's the problem: a lot of people do is that they will do the sign up for the counseling after they've already set the date. So yeah, we're getting married September 1st, and then they go to the priest or whatever at August 15th. And up at this point, if the priest is like, you know what, there are humongous red flags, he's a sex addict, and you're a shopping addict with a history of infidelity, you know, whatever it is, it's not gonna be like, you know what, Father, you're right, we're just gonna cancel everything. We've already invested $20,000 in this wedding. We're just gonna cancel everything. No, it's not gonna happen. So look, you need to go to counseling before you set the date, because if you legitimately love the other person and you love yourself, you're going to want to know the red flags. But so much, you know, when you're in love, quote unquote, you know, you get so P-napped and D-napped that you just don't want to see it. And you need to believe that this new relationship's going to work. It's like trying to fit the circle peg into the square hole, like the old toddler game. This will work. Even though there's tons of red flags, this will work. That's why it's 70%. What's another reason why the divorce rate's so high for second, third marriages? Well, you've already removed the stigma of divorce. Now, the stigma of divorce isn't nearly as bad as it was, let's say, in the 1950s, or, you know, compared to like 1780s, which divorce was extremely rare because everything was religious and you had to get a dispensation. But even compared to the 1950s, there was definitely a stigma to divorce. And back then in the 1950s, because we had fault divorce, you typically saw the phenomenon where the man was divorcing the woman to get the younger wife, but the woman would get a lot of alimony and so forth. But now, it's certainly since the 70s, when divorce was a major epidemic with the rush advent of no-fault divorce, so you didn't have to give a reason, so the cheater could just go get the divorce and get all the money. You definitely see the stigma being gone. Now, divorce reached its peak in terms of gross numbers in 1980. And one of the reasons it's dropped a little is because cohabitation's gone up and divorce has gone down. But nevertheless, there's very little stigma now, unless you're in religious communities like the Hasidic Jews or something like that, that I'm getting a divorce. You know, in the old days, you could be ostracized, you could lose friends, you know, you're going to hell, all these things like that. Nowadays, you get divorced. Now there's shows on Bravo. You know, girlfriends got a divorce. Yeah, you're getting divorced. Yay, liberation. Yay, freedom. So there's no stigma anymore about divorce. And so if you went through the hurdles and loopholes and everything of the first divorce, and you had to go to court and spend money and go to mediation, and you went through all the difficult part of it, the second time around, when you find out that, quote, I'm not happy, you've already gone through the first time. So you're like, I already know what's the ups and downs and how to do it. This is easy. I've already done it the first time. And the stigma really isn't there. So that's certainly another reason. Another thing is just blending families. Blending families is, woo. And this goes to the stepfather, stepmother effect, which I've talked about in previous episodes, but I'll tangentially mention it here. So typically by the second marriage, there's going to be kids from the first marriage. Not always. I mean, certainly women are looking for men who don't have kids from a first marriage because they don't want to deal with it. And certainly men know the humongous red flag that is marrying single moms. But This is a hurdle because you are trying to blend families that have disparate views of a lot of things. And it really kind of depends on the age of the kids, too. In some ways, I suppose it's easier when the kids are very young, when the kids are 2 or 3. When they're marrying, as opposed to marrying when the kids are tweens or teenagers. But there's a lot of issues because, look, you're dealing with the biological father and mother still in their life, probably. And you're dealing with how you raise the kids differently. So let's say you have 2 kids and she has 2 kids and you move in together. And your 2 kids, I'll say that the man's 2 kids, you kind of raise them lackadaisically. You know, you're not really strict on them. But then your new wife raised her kids very strictly. And so now you have this kind of inconsistency in the household and that they're raised very differently. And so now you have to have very good, effective communication and talk about like, okay, we need to be consistent. We can't play favorites. And you guys are coming from disparate viewpoints as to how to discipline and raise kids. Also, it's even little things like night owls versus early birds. Do we eat as a family? Do we not eat as a family? Oh, you have a policy of no screens after 8. Oh, we never had that policy. So a lot of it is that. Plus, you have the biological father and mother around, and they might not be intentionally, but they're always bringing up stuff that irks the new wife or new husband. It could be as little as, let's face it, men don't want other men raising their children. And I would hazard to think that women feel the same way, but women don't have to deal with that because women get custody of the kids 85% of the time. So men don't like when another man raises their kids. So men necessarily don't like it when their ex-wife remarries. Now, they might not like it because, not because he's still in love with her, but because another dude who he has no relation to, knows nothing about, has his paws in his children's lives. And so that biological father may be angry, upset, bringing things up to the ex-wife, and so forth. And then the new husband doesn't really like it. And then the first wife is defending the biological father. And then that makes the new husband upset. And also the thing about being a stepdad, and we recommend it not at all, because you're essentially the retro cuckold. You're putting finances in raising another man's seed. Now, we don't really see it that way, but in the animal kingdom, you never see a new lion coming in and hunting and bringing food to the previous alpha lion's offspring. No, he kills all the previous alpha lion's offspring, and then he mates with the lioness, I suppose, and breeds her out and then raises his own kids. So in some ways, stepdads is a thankless job because you have to understand the dynamic, how it is fundamentally different than stepmotherism. Stepfathers, women marry men who make more than them. And so the understanding is and expectations that you're going to be providing. You're the provisioner. So when the stepdad comes in, he is having these kids who are not his DNA stay at his house. He's paying for their food. He's paying for their room and board. He's paying for groceries, karate lessons, you know, whatever it is, but it's not his kids' DNA. So when he might see these kids grow up, but again, when those kids have kids, it's not going to be his grandkids. And stepdadism is a noble thing, but understand it's a thankless job. And eventually the kids are going to grow up and inevitably you're going to get the, you're not my dad, I don't have to listen to you. And in some ways they're right. They don't need to listen to you because you're not their biological father. So you get along with them, things are great, but when the sheetrock hits the fan, especially in adolescence, they're going to go through this rebellion, and then they're going to reevaluate their mom and why their mom left their dad. And again, 75% of divorces are initiated by women, so in 90% when they're college educated. So normally, why did their mom leave their dad? And if they realize that their bio dad is a nice guy based on them getting along with them, they're going to be like, what? And then they're going to rebel against their mom even more than they already are rebelling, because kids, you know, teenage kids, especially teenage daughters, are rebelling against their moms. And so now you're kind of the scapegoat to all of this. And like, you're the guy that replaced my dad. So you're going to get a lot more attitude from that. And it's just a thankless job. It's just a thankless, you're a human ATM machine to kids that aren't even yours. But look, it's a noble thing if you want to do it. But if you step back, it's better for you just to find a woman who has no kids and have kids with her that you know are going to be your biological kids. And yes, you can have 1 or 2 biological kids with the new wife, but you're still dealing with two or three kids that you're raising from her previous marriage that you're still putting resources into. The other issue with the stepmom and stepfather effect is the stats. So we've talked about this before in a previous episode, but and we'll briefly mention it here because I don't want this episode to go too long. But the rate of abuse is exorbitantly high in second marriages. So we call this the stepfather effect. And so there was a big study that came out of Australia that showed that kids who are raised by their non-biological father, so they don't live in the same house with their biological father, have up to a 40 times more likely chance of being physically and sexually abused. They have a 15 times more likely chance of dying from an unintended accident, like a drowning in the pool or falling down the stairs. They have a 50 times more likely chance to be killed. Why is this? Well, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons here, but sometimes when the mom is divorced and she's a single mom, you know, she's so desperate to find a new guy to latch onto the provisioning that she'll just start dating a bunch of guys, right, to find the next guy. And some of those guys that she brings in, she shouldn't introduce to her kids ever. They shouldn't be sleeping over. And I know a lot of you women who are listening are like, I would never do that. But again, there are some women who have low discernment or low IQ who do this all the time. And so now a lot of these guys who are banging the single mom, they know single moms are easy targets to get laid, but they're also easy targets to get access to the kids. And some of these guys are groomers. Some of these guys have no interest to be with the single mom. They just want to get to the kids to molest the kids. So that's one thing. The other thing is, again, going back to the stepfather. So at the beginning, you're in love with the woman. But 5-10 years in, you get disillusioned and you get angry. The stepdad gets angry. He's like, what am I doing? These kids don't respect me. I'm spending all this money on, you know, I'm dealing with the biological father all the time. I'm getting the all the time. You're not my dad. You're not my dad. And they get angry and then they take it on the kids. Because it's easier to take it on the kids than take it on the wife, because we know women are one phone call away from destroying a man. But lots of times the woman is so codependent, and we see codependence much more prevalent in the female persuasion than the male persuasion, that, and you see this dynamic all the time where the stepdad is beating the kid, yelling the kid, maybe putting a cigar out on the arm like from The Breakfast Club, John Bender. And the mom knows about it, but the mom turns a blind eye because she needs to stay married to this guy for a variety of reasons. It could be financial reasons. It could be the idea that she's post-wall and doesn't think she can get another man. So the mom turns a blind eye. With the stepmother effect, it's a little different. The stepmother will come in and, just like Cinderella, will try to alienate the new dad, the dad, from the kids from the previous marriage. Because she sees the kids from the previous marriage as a threat. She wants the husband to love her and any offspring they have from the second relationship more than the previous kids. So lots of times the previous kids are kind of just dispersed, sent away eventually. And the dad, being such a cuck, denapped simp, falls for it because he's in love with the second wife, even though, of course, the divorce is probably coming. But he doesn't stand up for his kids from his first marriage, and he kind of casts them aside for the new family. And you see this, trope in so many shows. I mean, recently I was watching You, the stalker show on Netflix. You see it on that show too. And it's very common. So that's the other problem. One of the things, going back to blood and families and some of the issues, is that some couples are doing the living alone separately phenomenon, where if they have the money, what they'll do is, look, I like my independence. I like to be clean. You're kind of messy. I like to put my kids to sleep early. You like to let your kids stay up late. So why don't we get houses next to each other in the same neighborhood and we essentially live separately? It's easier for the kids. Because, you know, the other issue is the kids getting along. That's a whole separate issue. But, you know, we're kind of used to our life and our routines. You're kind of used to your life and your routines. So let's be married. But for the sake of the kids and just making everything easier, we're just going to live separately until the kids are out of the house. Now, a lot of couples don't want to do that because I want to sleep in the same bed. And, you know, but I'm saying that has shown to work. That has shown to work. All right, so what else? I mean, I think the biggest one is just simply the early childhood trauma. You know, I've talked about this in past episodes, how we have to do the deep work. You have to do the deep work. What do I mean by the deep work? all of us have some sort of childhood trauma. Mine is well documented in the 65 episode Confessions of an Obi-Shad podcast. Go check that out. But everybody has some sort of trauma they're bringing from childhood. Could be yet an alcoholic mom or a drug-addled dad, or you were abandoned by your dad, or you were abused, or you suffered neglect, or you were in a heinous car accident when you saw your brother get his head chopped off, or whatever it is. We have this trauma, and unless you go to therapy and confront it early on, sorry about that, it's going to manifest in some way as you go through adolescence and certainly in adulthood. It could be you develop a drinking problem, you self-mutilate, you cut, you develop an eating disorder, a shopping disorder, whatever it is. Or you end up marrying somebody who's just like one of your parents. So if, for example, if you had a volatile father who was, alcohol-addled, volatile father who was up and down, some days he'd come home and, I love you, you're great, you're sweet. And the next day he's coming home and he's, you're horrible, you're ugly, you're fat, I can't stand you, I wish you were never born. That volatility, you might not even know, but you're going to be attracted to finding a man who's just as volatile because that's all you know. That's your normalcy. Or same thing with addictions. It's the same thing with addictions. So that's the other issue. So a lot of times we don't notice these crutches, these coping mechanisms, as I call them over at Confessions, when we get married the first time, because we get married at 25, 26, and yet the years get later. Now we're getting married at 28. But you don't notice it until the first marriage. And then, again, when we divorce, we always think we have the right narrative. We rationalize it as we had the right narrative and we're the victim, right? We're divorcing because he did this, or we're divorcing because she did this. Instead of saying that, we probably both contributed to it. Now, one of you initiated and filed first, but we both did contribute to it on one level or another. But it's just so easier to play the victim status and not take any culpability at all for the demise of the relationship, because it's just easier narrative in your mind to sleep with. And then when the new person comes, you can spin that narrative to them to initiate the white knight reflex. So we're not really doing any introspection at all as to what we brought to the relationship that caused it to end. So it ends, we're in victim status, we're in vulnerable mode, we meet somebody new, we project all these things into the new relationship. Oh, this one's going to be different, you're the love of my life, and then of course the new person's like, I'm nothing like your ex. And so you get dick napped again, and you want to believe in this fairy tale, and like, I fell for this too. And there's so many red flags you could see, kind of see, but you don't want to see, or you think that you're the exception, right? You're the exception. And I always mention, it's like, look, for you guys, if the woman divorce raped the guy in the first marriage, took all of his assets, or even more heinously, practiced parental alienation, poisoned the kids against him, or even more heinously, trumped up false abuse allegations against her, against the kids, what makes you think she wouldn't do it again? She's already set the precedent that she's comfortable enough or crazy cluster B enough to do it to the first guy. What makes you think she wouldn't do it to you the second time around? And of course, you can step back even more and be like, look, if she initiated divorce on the first marriage, what makes you think you're any different for the second time? It's astonishing how we can just rationalize so much, how we can just blind ourselves. Say, oh, she would never do that. She would never call the cops on me. Well, she called the cops on the ex. Oh, but I'm not the ex. And the thing is, look, people get disillusioned. And the lovey-doveyness that you have early on isn't likely going to last 10, 15 years. And again, this is one of the reasons why the divorce rate's so high. Because when you get to the 5 to 10 years and you're throwing in all the stressors of the blended family, plus the stressors of debt and financial issues and all these other things, you'd be like, yeah, I'm not happy. I'm out. Because divorce is so easy to get now. It's so easy. I'm out. You're not making me happy. And instead of looking in the mirror and be like, well, maybe I am not happy. No, so no matter who I'm with, I'm not going to be happy. But it's just so much easier to blame the other person. And now you have kids from the second marriage. Now they're going to come from a broken home. And so these are things that we really need to look at before you're dumb enough to get married. And when I say dumb enough, I'm not saying women are dumb enough. But there's a good financial reason for women to want to get remarried. But for you men, There's absolutely no reason to get remarried, especially if you have kids. Why would you get remarried? You don't need a second mom. See, this is, again, you got to do the deep work. I need a girl. I need a woman around to dress me, to tell me what to do. No. Grow up. Grow up. Like, the last thing is this. Women, I look at, like, Kate Winslet, the actress, Kate Hudson. They've been married three times, and they've had three kids from three different men. And it's possible for women to financially benefit from marriage and remarriage. And a woman who's even moderately attractive, but say an attractive woman, right? She's 22, peak sexual market value. She marries a wealthier man, let's say a doctor. They stay married for 5 years. She has a kid with him, and then she initiates divorce. And I'm not saying all women would do this scenario, ladies, so back down. So from there, let's say he's making $300,000 a year. She's going to get half of that in a community property state, plus child support for 20% of $300,000. So that's what, $60,000 a year child support, plus the division of the assets. Then, she remarries, finds a new guy, 29, has a kid with him. Same thing. It's going to be another guy who makes a lot of money. Because look, even though I'm telling you not to marry single moms, most blue pill men will marry single moms if they're hot enough. So then the same thing, 5 years later, they divorce, she has a kid with him, now she's going to get $60,000 from him annually, plus a division of assets. And then later, you know, at the end, when she's losing her looks and she's post-wall, she might find the beta provider, and it's the same thing, rinse, lather, repeat. And she might stay with the beta provider, the last husband, even though she doesn't really find him attractive because she needs the provisioning and she craves the provisioning. Or she might divorce him, and then she'll have another bonanza. And so women can do this. Not all women will do this, but women can do this. They know the system, the family law system, the court system's on their side. The system is set up to benefit them. So men, the system is not set up to benefit you. It's not. And I don't want to see you have a gray divorce. Where you get divorced at 55, 60, when you're at your peak sexual market value years, because that's your peak income earning years, and she takes half, if 70% of your assets, and if you had kids later on, you might have to pay child support too, and maybe alimony, and now you got 5-10 years away from retirement, and now you're not going to have time to rebuild. So we don't want the gray divorce. So men, look, I make that statement, like 10 men divorce, 7 of them are going to want to remarry, 2 are going to go MGTOW, 1's going to kill himself. And the thing I tell the 7 men, it's like, you really think you're going to find something different? Well, maybe you will. I mean, there's a chance you could find a successful second marriage, but statistically, you're not. Statistically, it's a 70% divorce rate. And then even with the remaining 30%, how many of those are going to be happy marriages 20, 25 years in? 10%, 15% maybe? I mean, most of you guys know miserable married people. So what are the chances that your second marriage is going to succeed? Not a lot, men, not a lot. Plus, she has the atomic bomb to blow up at any time. Again, marrying a woman's like giving her a loaded gun in 21st century America. And she has the loaded gun or atomic bomb that she can blow up in your face at any time and divorce you and take your assets. So is it worth it? No. If you had kids from your first marriage, there's absolutely no reason to remarry. Purge your relationship thirst. This idea you can only be happy if you have a woman in your life. Purge the thirst. Purge the thirst. And then be an independent man. Live your life. Do what you want. Travel when you want. You know, if you want to have short-term relationships or whatever, you can do those. As long as you purge the thirst and know you're not going to get dick-napped again, there's you know, little risk, but there's some risks in having short-term relationships, like pregnancy and STDs and false allegations. But don't ever sign the contract, because you should have learned from the first time around how it didn't work out for you. But I know so many divorced men who are engaged or married to a woman, and there's just so many red flags, and they just don't want to see it. Oh, yeah, she's got 4 kids from 2 different men. Oh, she's got $150,000 of debt. Oh, she put a guy in jail, false alleged. You know, she told me privately it was fake. You know, like there's tons of red flags, and then there's other red flags too. But they're just so naive, or they're so desperate to have the second mom. They're so desperate that they don't want to see they're setting themselves up for a world of harm. And look, it might not be the first year, it might not be the 5th year of the second marriage, it could be the 10th, 15th year. But no, I mean, there's absolutely no reason to remarry, guys. No reason. And just remember, women hold the bait and switch. And men hold the bait and switch too, but certainly women more. where the woman, if she knows you're a trad con, a traditional conservative, she'll be like, I'm a trad con too. I'm religious too. I'll go to church too. Or they'll be like, you know, I'll give you sex all the time. Why, you were in a sexless marriage, your first marriage the last 5 years? I'll give you sex anytime you want. So the guy's like, wow, she's religious and she's going to give me sex? Or she says that she doesn't spend money like my ex who hemorrhaged out all my bank accounts. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And as soon as you sign the contract, you have no leverage. She has all the leverage. So now she'll be like, yeah, we're not having sex. What are you going to do about that at that point? Or let's say she was already calm and had a tranquil demeanor and now she's a rager. Yeah. Now what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You going to divorce her? Well, she'll get half your assets. You going to stay in a miserable marriage? And then whatever she wants, she'll just divorce you and get half your assets. Either way, you're losing half your assets. Wake up, men. Last thing I want to say, if you're really serious, as my white tea has gone cold, if you're really serious about remarrying, do the deep work. You got to go to counseling. You got to figure out your childhood triggers, why you're attracted to certain types of people, why, for you guys, why you're a yes man, a nice guy, why you have problems maintaining frame, why you have problems being masculine, why do you drink too much, or why do you eat too much, or why do you watch TV too much? Why do you self-harm? You know, same thing for women. Why do you do X, 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 and Y, and so forth? These are things that you seriously need to do before you even entertain or set the date for the second marriage. You need to do deep therapy. Break the codependence, because a lot of people are codependent. And look at your partner. And this is the last thing I'll mention. Look at your partner if you're not yet married, if you're engaged. If they've been previously married, it's a humongous red flag. If they were capable of leaving the husband or the father of their children, what makes you think if you have children with her, she won't leave you eventually? So look, if she has kids from a previous marriage, or if she did any harm to those men in the first marriage, or she has a lot of debt, never qualified for a credit card, has tons of student loan debt, is morbidly overweight. Yes, that is a red flag. All these things, you need to step back and like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? Do the deep work, figure it out. And it's never too late. But once you sign the contract, then it's really hard. It's almost irrevocable what you can do without having mitigating financial losses. But you really have to take a good look and think, is this really what I want? Am I rebounding? What was the lag time between the end of my last relationship or marriage and me meeting this second person? If it was a month or 2 months, it's a rebound. I don't care if it's succeeded and it's been going well for a year or whatever. It's a rebound. There's that saying, what was it? Something like, for the amount of time you were in a relationship, you need to be single at least a quarter of that time. Don't go on the dating market. So let's say you're in a 10-year marriage, let's say, whatever. Then you shouldn't date for 3 years or 2.5 years. But again, so many people just don't have the forbearance to do that. And they want to jump on in. They want to jump on in because they hate being alone. But I would tell you that if you see red flags and you got to take off those rose-colored spectacles, people, if you truly know there's red flags, and look, there's tons of content out on YouTube or courses, you know, what are the 40 red flags that a woman has or a man has? So you can look up the red flags if you're in complete denial. But if she has major red flags or he has major red flags, another one, the woman says, yeah, you know, he was verbally abusive to the first wife, but he won't do that to me. Okay. He'd cheat. He was a philanderer and had several affairs on his first wife. He won't do that to me. Okay. Yeah. You keep thinking that. Denial is not only a river in Egypt. You keep thinking that. So do the deep work. Purge your childhood trauma. Don't remarry. That's the end of it right there. Guys, if you like the content, please consider donating. There's a PayPal link account in the episode notes of this episode and all episodes. Donate monthly or one time, $5, $10, just to defray the cost of the pod hosting. The website's Naturopathic Earth. There's tons of holistic articles there for men's health and women's health. Lots of recipes as well. If you need some counseling, contact me through the Clarity FM link. And we can talk for as long as you need about weight loss or intersexual dynamics, stuff we're talking about today. Another way to help us out is buy my two books, Confessions of an Obese Child, where I talk about what it was like growing up overweight and why I grew up overweight. And then Revelations of a Weight Loss Warrior, How I Lost Over 100 Pounds and Kept It Off Now for 30 Years. Go check those out on Amazon. They're on, you can get them on Kindle or paperback. And the last way you can help us out is I'm an Amazon affiliate. So if you go to naturopathicearth.com and you click on the articles and click on the food articles, there's about 300 of them, homemade recipes. You'll see links to buy, let's say, dark chocolate or cinnamon or whatever, coconut flour or whatever on for the recipe. Click on there to get to Amazon. And then from there, search on whatever you want to buy on Amazon. And we get a 2% commission at no expense to you. So let's say you end up spending $50 on, I don't know, a wallet. We get, what's that? 550, what? I can't even do 2%. What's 10%? $5. So like $2? We get $2 out of that? That doesn't sound, a dollar? I think it's a dollar. So we get a dollar from that. Last thing I want to mention is, please post an honest review. If you guys like the pivot and I'm focusing more on men's health and men's issues, post an honest review. If you don't like the fact that I've pivoted to more men-centric topics, post a review. Subscribe so you get these episodes directly. And please post an honest review and subscribe to my two other podcasts, Confessions of an Obese Child and The Essential Oils and Herbal Apothecary. We had an episode on Wednesday about the power of kava root to treat anxiety. All right, guys, take care. Bye-bye. God bless.
Thank you for listening to the Awakened Man Podcast. Find us on Facebook at the Awakened Man Podcast page. Subscribe and post an honest review on Apple Podcasts and consider donating to our crowdfunding account. And remember, freedom is better than needle. Until next time.
Music attributed to Nine Inch Nails.